Hello, I'm Guillermina Gonzalez, Executive Director of the Delaware Arts Alliance, your host for today, and with me, a good friend of this program, Carrie Gray, Managing Director, Wilmington Renaissance Corporation, spearheading creative districts in the city of Wilmington. Carrie, you are the individual to talk to right now as creative districts are taking a very nice shape. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And bring us up to speed. I mean, the Wilmington Renaissance Corporation, just by the name, we know that they are making Wilmington having a second renaissance, if you will. Tell us what the Wilmington Renaissance has been up to and perhaps redefining or re-explaining, if you will, what Creative Districts is all about.
Sure. Well, Wilmington Renaissance has been working on the revitalization of downtown Wilmington, along with a number of partners, for roughly the last 22 years or so. We have, been focused on the revitalization of Market Street mostly during that time, and have now just launched an initiative to push the investment that's been happening on Market Street further west into the western boundaries of the downtown and into the Quaker Hill neighborhood, which is the city's one of the city's most historic neighborhoods. And so we're really focused on how do we promote this area as the creative center of Wilmington, if not the state, and really take this area through a renaissance that includes redevelopment of vacant buildings and vacant land, establishment of spaces that artists and creatives can use, et cetera.
Right. And then why creative districts? We know that it's an economic development tool and it's been taking positive shape in many different cities. Some others have used many other tools, but you thought important to include the arts more clearly in the revitalization of Wilmington as a city. Why is that, and how it compares perhaps to your experiences visiting some other cities that have used the same concept?
So this conversation about a creative district in Wilmington really started with reading about the revitalization of a blighted neighborhood in Paducah, Kentucky, through the recruitment of artists from all over the country to come there to buy homes for a dollar from the city, renovate them and make them their live-work spaces. And so that spurred our thinking about, you know, how is this working in Paducah? How is it working in other cities? And so as part of the early phases of the discussion about a creative district in Wilmington, we looked at cities and examples and best practices all over the country, but particularly honed in on the successes that were happening in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Providence, Rhode Island, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Maryland, and, you know, saw some really great examples of how the arts, when placed at the center of the revitalization of those cities, were having the ability to be more sustainable and, frankly, more centered on creative placemaking, which is a strategy that helps to create a sense of identity and a sense of place for an area by infusing the arts and culture and of that community into that effort. And so when you look at how other cities have done it and done it well and sustained their revitalization of their downtown or their neighborhoods, and you see the arts as a driver, then, you know, it only makes sense that Wilmington would be able to do the same thing.
And people sometimes are hesitant when it comes to just the inclusion of the arts for many reasons. And they think that it's just an accessory in many occasions, that it's just for rich people to do things over the weekend. And comes to mind the lady singing at the opera, that kind of thing. How can we dispel, if you will, the myth that creative districts and the inclusion of the arts is just for the rich and famous, sort of speak?
Well, I think that's done in a number of ways. First, it's done by including the people that live in this neighborhood in the process of deciding and determining the programmatic elements that will be part of the neighborhood. And so by including folks and engaging the neighborhood and the community into the process, they become owners of the process and owners of the product that is developed at the end of it all. And I think the other way in which we can do that is by providing programming that is relevant to people of all ages and all backgrounds. And then finally, I think really it's about helping folks see the assets that they have within their own community and own neighborhood already. This conversation in the very beginning started with a series of focus groups that we did in the neighborhoods in the East Side and West Center City and West Side in conjunction with Christina Cultural Arts Center and Ray Jones Avery, who's been the executive director there for practically ever. And, you know, we talked with the neighbors and the residents about what are the cultural and creative and artistic assets that are in your neighborhood already. And, you know, sometimes they don't even know what's really in front of them. Because when you think of arts, I think you think of it with that capital A of major institutions, major presenting houses. But really, it's the poetry slam at St. Sandra and Matthew Church. It is the step group at Hicks Anderson, or you know, it is the assets that are in the community are already there, but sometimes they're just not framed in a way that says this is arts, this is culture, this is creativity.
So is that that's the myth that we need to dispel, maybe, that the arts happen in my neighbor's next door.
Absolutely. It's happening everywhere. I mean, there are people already living in Quaker Hill. There are a number of artists already living in that neighborhood. But they didn't necessarily promote themselves or maybe just didn't self-identify in a way in which they thought, well, gosh, yeah, I'm giving piano lessons here in my house.
Well, that makes the individual an artist right there.
I could hang a shingle out front and promote that, and that helps to promote this district as a creative district.
So rethinking the community from a different standpoint.
Absolutely.
And you touched on something that is quite important. When people have a part and a stake in the outcome, and you've been doing that clearly, they've been incorporated in the discussions, in the planning process. So they have said something, they have shared something, and therefore they are expecting something to happen. So it's a very ground up process.
Absolutely. And it's a constantly evolving process. So in the very beginning, there are, you know, maybe a handful of folks who said, okay, I'll be part of this process. And then as we go out and we knock on doors and we talk to folks, we engage more and more in the neighborhood in the discussion of what they'd like to see there. And really, you know, we'll never reach everyone, all at once. So we have to do that kind of door-to-door interaction. And two, what we're trying to impress on the folks that live in this neighborhood already is our focus is filling the vacancies, so the vacant properties that, you know, may become a ground place for bad activity in the neighborhood are eliminated, and they're brought back to life with residents living in them, and in our case, focused on home ownership. And so we're not buying properties where people already live that would be pushed out. And we're really focused on helping folks understand that the Creative District Vision Plan is just that. It's a vision document. It's not a comprehensive community development plan. It's meant to engage the community in a process by which they can then determine how they'd like to see their neighborhood evolve.
Now, I imagine that it's been a positive, but in occasions a way with obstacles. If you could define what are the, maybe the, I don't want to say most difficult, but the things that you consider obstacles that need to be overcome, what are those and why?
So there's, you know, could be any number of reasons or obstacles. I think one might be just gaining the trust of the folks that live there and have lived there for 30 years. There have been some stops and starts over the years in terms of reinvestment into their neighborhood. And so, you know, they may look at our effort and the collective partnership that we've put together as just, this is just another try at something that may or may not succeed. So gathering people together and having conversations with them time and time again is part of the process of building that trust. And I think also just, you know, helping folks understand that, you know, we're not here to take over the neighborhood. We're not here to, you know, do anything that's going to be harmful to the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we really just want to be able to bring the assets, both human and fiscal assets that we mm-hmm. have as an organization, to their neighborhood to help them realize the vision that they've had for their neighborhood all along,
mm-hmm.
and help them understand how the vision for a creative district can only complement what they've wanted to see in their neighborhood all along.
There you go. And what you think about maybe more obstacles and things, or maybe the positive things that mm-hmm. we need to reemphasize. Let me reengage with the audience that to remind you that you're listening and are tuned into News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV for the Delaware State of the Arts radio show. Our guest today is Carrie Gray, Managing Director of the Wilmington Renaissance Corporation and spearheading the Creative District effort in Wilmington. You are the head of that. I don't know if I did say correctly, but you are indeed spearheading the effort, and it's taking a very nice route and shape. You can just see Market Street flourishing left and right, and that speaks to results, right?
Yes. I mean, Market Street has changed dramatically in the last 17 years that I've been doing this work on behalf of Wilmington, and really just in the last couple of months, there's been some dramatic changes on Market Street.
Right.
New apartments are opening. New residential opportunities are being developed. New businesses are getting ready to open or already have.
Or galleries, just like.
And galleries. Eunice Lafayette is getting ready to open a great gallery down in
Indeed.
Loma.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm super excited about. I mean, she's been an amazing right. arts anchor in Wilmington for years. And, you know, and she is truly a lightning rod, I think, for the energy and the enthusiasm of the arts community in Wilmington. So we're just really excited about her and her opportunity to have a gallery and her opportunity to use that gallery not only to promote her own artwork, but also the artwork of the emerging artists in Wilmington. So it's a really exciting time, I think.
Right. And things that, what needs to happen, Carrie, to expedite the process? You would like to see this happening like massively right in this very minute. But there are things that you probably want to emphasize, things that you probably want to see changing for these creative district efforts to take a faster route, if you will. What are those things that come to mind?
Well, I think, you know, if I had all the money in the world and a magic wand, I still think that we wouldn't, that if we did something overnight, it may not be authentic. That mm-hmm. there is a process that has to take place with the community and engaging the community that that means that things will truly have a chance to succeed long term.
Mm-hmm.
If I, you know, if I were just popping up operations or, you know, little galleries and shops and restaurants and such overnight, if there's not that buy-in from the community, I don't know that there will be the ability to sustain those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's things that I wish we could do quicker, and there's things that I know are just going to take some mm-hmm. time, and that time is okay because it's part of the process of the mm-hmm. revitalization of neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
When we look again at those best practices all over the country, none of this happened overnight.
That's what you were reading my mind. I was thinking about the examples that you mentioned at the beginning, Paducah, Pittsburgh. I mean, if you happen to go to Pittsburgh these days, you don't even believe that it's Pittsburgh anymore.
It's amazing. And really, that evolution of Pittsburgh has been 25 years in the making.
Right.
But people, or 30 even, but people don't even realize that.
Right.
And the same thing with Loma, the Lower Market Street area mm-hmm. in Wilmington. A lot of folks don't realize that really has been probably almost 20-year process to mm-hmm. create the vibrancy that is there in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So this is a long-term process. How long did it take for Paducah, in this case, or Providence, for instance, or Baltimore? You also mentioned those three cities.
Mm-hmm.
How long did it take for them? And probably what is the shape or what was the most important ingredient you found in each location?
I think the most important ingredient that no matter the time horizon on how mm-hmm. long it took, the most important ingredient has been a strong partnership with city government.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that in our city government, even through the administrative change mm-hmm. from the Baker administration to the Williams administration. You know, this whole strategy wouldn't be possible if we didn't have that strong support from city government. And we know that to be true from what we've seen in other cities as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that is absolutely one key. I think the other key is funding support,
mm-hmm.
that public-private partnership where you have some grant dollars for affordable housing from the state
mm-hmm.
and you have grant dollars from the private funding community. That come together to make these projects go,
mm-hmm.
particularly when you're talking about historic buildings that have been vacant for a long time
mm-hmm.
that require a lot of renovation and investment. So Interfaith Community Housing is the developer of the first 10 units of affordable housing for homeownership
mm-hmm.
That is targeting artists to live in the Quaker Hill neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't have those, you know, public-private dollars at their disposal, it wouldn't be possible to mm-hmm. renovate these homes because of the exorbitant cost to do
mm-hmm.
it.
And you touched on something that is not that sexy, if you will, but it's part of a very important part of the process, which is housing. It's at the end of the day for people to live in certain locations. It's about facilitating their living, and in occasions it's reducing prices so they have that housing accessible. So it talks about a lot more than just bringing artists. Is what needs to happen in a location, in your experience, and based on other cities that have done the same? Tell us about those unsexy things, in other words, the kind of things that need to happen and are not necessarily that visible to make creative districts take root.
Well, I think when, for example, with the Willing Street Artist Village project, which is between 5th and 6th Washington mm-hmm. and West Streets, right in Quaker Hill. With that project in particular, we started having conversations about that project at the end of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of hoops that have to be, you know, jumped through before we can get to the launch of that project that mm-hmm. we held in July. So, you know, some properties had to be acquired. You know, grants had to be written. You know, approval processes within city government had to go through a step-by-step process
mm-hmm.
through four different approvals. So, you know, and these are just all things that are naturally part of the process,
mm-hmm.
but it just means that, you know, you can't just buy a building and renovate it tomorrow
right.
and open it 6 months later.
It's not that way.
Right. It's just not, you know, and that is kind of the, you know, behind the scenes, like this is just the natural part of the process.
The work needs to happen and people
right.
need to be aware of those
mm-hmm.
things. Now, a couple of things that come to mind in the few minutes that we have left. Contact information, meaning people interested in being part of this massive change, if you will, of Wilmington, the creative district effort. How can they get a hold of you?
Sure. Well, we just launched our, in July, all of our marketing and social media presence
mm-hmm.
for the Creative District. So the website is creativedistrictwilm.com. And we have our Twitter account, which is Creative District Wilm, and our Instagram account, Creative District Wilm, and Facebook account, Creative District Wilm. So it's all the same.
Easy to get.
No matter the channel, it's
you
all the
Google
same.
You just Google it, Creative Districts, Wilmington, and there you go.
It
you're going
to
have.
Easy to remember, exactly.
Right. And it's important for people to be engaged. If they mm-hmm. want to be and have a part in a stake in the outcome, they need to be involved in the conversations. They need to understand the vision. And talking about vision, what vision do you have for both Creative Districts and the Wilmington Renaissance as we move forward?
Well, Wilmington Renaissance, our board voted last year to make the Creative District our number one priority as an
mm-hmm.
organization. And we are a staff of four that just grew to a staff of six. So we are small, and so therefore
but
we have to be, but mighty, yes. So we have to be pretty laser focused in
mm-hmm.
terms of what we need to get done. So the Creative District for now, to serve as the convener of all the partners that need to be brought together
mm-hmm.
to implement the different parts of the Creative District strategy is really our focus
mm-hmm.
For the near term. And so that is really what we're wanting to put all of our energy into.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been important for us to make sure that you know, as the Creative District evolves, that it has its own identity and brand.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we've launched all of these channels for the Creative District.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilmington Renaissance's channels of our website and newsletter and things will continue to talk about kind of the main core pillars of focus that are important for Wilmington, whether that's education or mm-hmm. arts or culture, economic development, business development, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see a little bit of a distinction between the two presence
right.
on social media.
His intention to have the creative districts to be its own entity eventually, or that is in the making?
You know, it's been talked about, and we really aren't sure yet
whether okay.
that will make sense or not. And I think there will come a time when we know definitively one way or the other whether it needs to mm-hmm. be its own, you know, nonprofit entity, or whether it can remain under the umbrella of Wilmington Renaissance
mm-hmm.
and through these strategic partnerships. You know, we say this all the time, that we are not the kind of funding mm-hmm. stream for all Creative District projects, that we bring the partners to the table that have a specific expertise.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, with Interfaith, they're an affordable housing developer, and we are not. So mm-hmm. when we needed housing developed, we went out and sought that partner.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of the affordable housing development funding and projects that will happen through partners.
There you go.
There may be programmatic partners or business development partners, et cetera. So our role is really just to pull the pieces together and pull the partners together to move these.
So it sounds like that's probably the way to go as you guys move forward on the creative districts. Just to thank you again for your time today. It's always enlightening to understand how creative districts work and how it's taking shape in Delaware. Thank you very much.
Thank you.